Good afternoon and welcome to Snell Nation. So we're going to mix it up today, and I wanted to provide you with just some audio from a collaboration I did on the Nico show. What we did on there is we did a comparison between the U.S. and the EU just in our government's response to lockdowns. We talked about a few other topics, all centered around COVID. And I think it's something you'll enjoy. You might get something out of it. Please feel free to check it out and let me know what you think. Enjoy.
Sir Thomas, this is the man on LinkedIn that's basically the same as me, except times 10 with the amount of amazing content he's coming out with. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to finally do this. We've had quite a lot of demand for our little talk together.
Yeah. I've had a nudge here and there saying, hey, we should probably get together. So I'm glad we're able to do this.
How are you finding podcasting? You've got into it quite recently, I've seen.
It's a little different. It's something I had to do a little bit of research into in the past. I did a lot of YouTube videos. I also use Twitter and some other platforms. Unfortunately, in 2020, of course, there was this boom in censorship. So I took quite a few hits on a lot of platforms. And then someone nudged me and said, hey, have you thought about starting a podcast? And then one of my friends talked to me about the Anchor app and said, hey, you know, I'll give it a try. And it just sort of took off from there. Mm-hmm.
So we've been sort of recommended to talk on, we've got different perspectives. You've got the US perspective. I've got the European and British perspective. So I'm thinking maybe we could go back to just before the pandemic happened and we can walk through each other's history and thought process up until now, probably starting around, I don't know, January of 2000, and I'm getting lost of the dates, man. Was it 2001 or 2020? January, yeah, when we first heard about it from China.
Okay. Well, now, January 2020, there was some loose just talk about something emerging, but I didn't think anything of it. I was actually traveling internationally. I got married in January 2020.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we were on our honeymoon. We were doing some island hopping in the Philippines, and somebody just said, hey, do you hear about what's going on? About some virus or something. And I just said, oh, you know, whatever it is, I'm sure it's just the media will blow it up. I'm not all that concerned about it. So we finished our honeymoon and I was flying back to the States for work. And I was at which airport? I believe I was flying through Hong Kong. And that's where I saw just so many people wearing masks, that sort of thing. I went to board a flight and it was recommended at that time, hey, you know, maybe you should wear a mask. And I just happened to have one in my suitcase. So I just put it on. It was black. So I guess it was a little off-putting for some people on the plane. They thought I was a ninja or something. I don't know. But I still kept telling my wife, like, just, oh, this is nothing. Just, you know, whatever this is, just a bunch of nonsense. You know, I'll be back. You know, we'll fly back over in a couple of months. And things just sort of exploded from there. So that's the take from, I guess, my angle, traveling internationally and coming back to the US, and then things just sort of exploded.
Yeah, I was in London around January. Man, I need to shave. Goodness, I've just seen how long this beard is getting. It's lack of seeing clients face to face. But anyway, yeah, I was in London working in the big office in January doing my software development, and we just saw some posts on this sort of new virus, and I just thought it was going to be like another SARS or HN1, whatever it's called, kind of deal. And then because I'm in the stock market, I'm a popular investor in eToro, I started to get worried in that's the timer for our interview. I started to look at the stock market and I just saw the prices starting to fall and lots of my FTSE stocks and all these kind of things. So it was a bit, you know, obviously I'm concerned about this finances, but I didn't think it was going to start spreading over here, and probably wasn't until around February or March before I started getting worried about, you know, is the variant, is the virus going to land in the UK, and is it going to be as bad as they're saying?
Yeah. It was something that felt surreal. And considering, like you mentioned, pre-COVID, pre-just this COVIDian hysteria, we just were living our lives, and we were traveling, we were working, and we had our routines. And this thing just it just came out of nowhere. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about the virus itself, but our individual government response to it, which had a great impact on all of us as well.
Yeah, so around March, when the stock market was pretty much bottoming, our office in London was getting, people were starting to get worried. I was going on the tube, getting worried about, you know, my own health, because it was complete unknown at this time, March 2020. And I can remember we were getting obsessed with hand sanitizers in the office. We couldn't go to the cafe, which is a bit of a drag because I used to really enjoy meeting with the colleagues, eating. So we basically had that starting to be socially distanced. So we basically started to stop eating with each other. And then around, I think it was early April, we basically got told to work from home. And at first it was great. Like, I just don't have to commute in the morning. You know, like, I don't spend about an hour getting to work. But I started to feel after about a month of that, the productivity wasn't quite there. It was just hard to sometimes get motivated to work in the same way. Plus, a lot of the stuff that we were doing, we needed physical devices for testing. So that was a bit of an inconvenience. But we just accepted it. You know, it's a pandemic. We need to be careful. It's all a bit of an unknown right now. It's getting hard to try and remember what it was actually like. And then after 2 months of sort of not being able to go in the office, I basically got rid of the place in London because there was no end in sight. And why am I paying rent in two places? So basically moved all my stuff up to Scotland, and was coming back and forth and still traveling between, you know, the UK and Austria. And at that time, it still felt normal. Like, this is like responsibility. This is the government doing its job, you know.
Well, same here. In our office, we follow that same path where it was just loose discussions in March. Then there was some changes, small changes in policy and just the way we do things within the office. We started rotating as far as who's in the office, who's teleworking from home, that sort of thing. And April, it was just, you know, hey, we want just about everyone out of the building, you know, working from home. Only come in if you absolutely have to, which at first I hated it. Because I liked it, as you said, I liked interacting with my colleagues, and, you know, we'd have lunch and we have face-to-face meetings, things like that. A lot of things I took for granted, but after a while, it just became just the new norm or the abnorm. And I found that I can be incredibly productive at home as long as I have a great internet connection and some devices to work from.
1st of August. And then basically everything started to lock down again because there was another spike, you know, September, August. And I'm trying to remember what it was like. I guess I was kind of accepting it as well because, you know, we thought that the virus was affected by the sunlight and, you know, there was going to, you know, they were expecting a flu season spike. So for me, you know, going into, you know, October, November, December, and the new lockdown, I wasn't even that bothered back then, to be honest. Don't know about you.
Yeah, I would say around June, July, as we rolled into the summer, I guess I just started to become a bit desensitized just with the market push, so the marketing campaign that happened in this country. And I felt as though it was starting to become just this fear narrative, and it became everything was COVID, fear, fear, fear. So I just went back to running regularly outside, interacting with family members, that sort of thing. But at the same time, trying to be respectful of the concerns that other people have. So if, you know, like my mother had some concerns, in the beginning, so I said, hey, I get it. You know, whenever there is a vaccine or a shot or whatever, if you choose to get it, of course, that's your choice. Whatever you feel is in your best interest. So I'll keep some distance and that sort of thing. So yeah.
The vaccine started to come out around, I think, was it January in the UK, in America? Can't remember now.
Yeah, the big push was, it was December in this country. It was like it was a slow roll process, but I think it was early December, and then it just kind of picked up speed after that. Mm.
I think around January is when I started to start getting annoyed, because I read some reports on people that had done research on hydrochlorine or something. There's one of these drugs that supposed to help people, and then I read about how it was sort of denied, and then there were some testimonies by doctors that were trying to give this to their patients and helping them survive, and they were being in trouble. And I was like, that's not right. That needs to be exposed, and we need to hear from the government why that was happening. And it's these things that are not being answered by these public officials. We're not getting straight answers. I was totally fine until we stopped getting straight answers on things that didn't make any sense. That's when I started to start getting worried.
Yeah, and I believe you're thinking of hydrochloroquine. If I can get that all out.
The H drug.
but yeah, it was put out there and it was advertised as a great alternative. But then, of course, you have big pharma and definitely in this country. It was being attacked at all sides. It was being, you know, demonized. It causes all these heart issues, all this stuff. And then I wonder, like, why is it that we're not exploring this? It's something that's been out there a while. There's a lot of data behind it, that the science, and it's all right there. You know, why are they pushing so hard against this? And when I saw that that emergency of use issued by the FDA, then I just started to wonder, okay, well, what's the criteria for getting that? And one angle to that, in order to get that emergency of use authorization, you have to rule out everything else in order for the pharmaceutical companies to get that approval, in order for Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson to get those approvals. Everything else has to be ruled as dangerous or whatever. And another angle, of course, is we have to be in a state of emergency. You know, so horrible, once those were all in place, then, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I just feel like these power-hungry people take us as stupid sheep. I just feel like I'm being looked down on all the time for as being ignorant.
I agree, and it's insulting. Just the fact that, you know, it's hard to even discuss some of these things, some of these topics in the public setting, because everything is political. Everything is just very, very emotional. People get emotionally activated and everything. But when you point certain things out, like, okay, the money, you know, why can't we talk about the money? Why can't we talk about, you know, this vaccine that Pfizer is pushing? It's going to net them over $10 billion in revenue, just that product by itself. And we can't even talk about that, or the fact that, you know, money is driving this thing. You know, I don't know.
I'm feeling ashamed for holding pharmacy stocks that I invested in 2018, but I've actually lost money on it, but I'm looking to dump them. I've already dumped my AstraZeneca because I think people are trying to get away from these patents not being exposed, not being given away. But yeah, anyway, back to February 2001, the vaccines are coming out, and personally me, I'm not taking the vaccine, but I didn't stop my family in Scotland taking the vaccine. But I just didn't say you shouldn't take it. You shouldn't take it. You know, if they want to take the vaccine, they can take it. But I think that people should be given the choice whether or not they want it or not. I know, and I'm a trained scientist. I looked at some of the papers, and I decided that for me, it's not well tested enough. They skipped stage 4 clinical trials, for me, I just don't understand these mandates and why, and for example, the European Union Commission are always on LinkedIn using hashtag safe vaccines, right? But 2019, there was a WHO massive virus safety a conference in New York, I believe, and there's plenty of sound bites on that video. That's just about 20 hours of video. And they're basically admitting that these vaccines are not a safe thing. They have adjuvants which have side effects. So the fact that the European Commission can get away by going on LinkedIn and blasting, you know, with a trumpet at 100 decibels, hashtag safe vaccines on every second post, for me is just insulting, and it just makes me angry and less trusting. And so basically what's happening is these institutions have turned somebody who basically was me on the fence very, very skeptical now.
Well, and it's just your own intuition, you know, and your own curiosity that's causing you to make that jump and to do that digging. And it makes you even more suspicious when there's someone trying to censor your speech and try to twist your words or pervert exactly what your vision is. So all those things, it makes us all even more just suspicious and wonder. And it's something I saw in this country with a lot of censorship, and it just made me more curious. Like, okay, well, you know, if I can't talk about the money, why can't I talk about the money? You know, if we can't talk about the science, you know, then that makes me want to dig even more. And another thing that got me with these vaccines was just looking at the FDA approval process for vaccines. And on average, it's about 8 to 10 years, roughly, the approval process for vaccine. You know, I can only speak for this country, but the process, it's very, very detailed, very, very methodical. There's a lot of analysis that happens, clinical trials, all that stuff. And the fact that we have all these things that have been around forever that still plague us, and we don't have cures for these or vaccines for certain things. But you want me to just line up and have you put something in my arm that you just, you know, breakneck speed, you just threw it together in a year. And then there's those legal protections that our governments have given these pharmaceutical companies as well. So, you know, if I die, if I have all these issues, which some people are already having those issues and dying, you know, my family can't go after these organizations. You know, there's no retribution.
Yeah. And we don't deny that the virus doesn't exist. I mean, my granddad died from COVID in hospital. He had a fall, he went to hospital, and he died from COVID, which is just devastating me. But he was 94, you know. And I just think the cure is much worse than the actual, you know, for the majority of people, the actual virus. And so now we are on to basically the European Union, where I'm at. I'm in Austria right now. And our chancellor, he's jumping ahead of the European Union with the green passports. I went to McDonald's because McDonald's was shut for a couple of months. I like to go there and work. And I was kind of looking forward to getting out and working in the McDonald's with, you know, some unhealthy food. But I basically went and paid for the food there. The lady at the counter says, "Oh, do you have your test results or something like that?" And I'm like, "What test results?" And so basically, you know, now we've got this situation where you have to have this ID to actually eat in a restaurant, and that for me just absolutely gutted me, because basically you're going to have to be continually tested, you know, which is just a, you know. Or you're going to have the vaccine. So a lot of people are going to get tired of having these tests. Maybe they're free where you're at. Maybe they're not free where you're at. Just to be able to function normally. Otherwise, you'll be basically stuck at home all the time, unless you want to share your medical data with every public and private business out there, you know?
Well, there's definitely a lot of coercion there where it's, you know, well, even our president, even one of his tweets was, you know, the answer is clear. Either, you know, you get vaccinated or you wear a mask until you do. So it's just this, and with those passports, it's making your life difficult and wearing you down to the point where everyone just says, you know what, fine, you know, and they just give up and, you know, just give me the shot so I can travel, I can spend time with my family, because the process is so complicated and the rules keep changing. And even for me, I was supposed to travel last week. Right now I'm supposed to be in Manila right now, but I'm not, because they made some adjustments. Their local government added in an extra step, depending on what country you're from, where, oh, well, you've got a passport, great, but you need to apply for a temporary entry visa and you have to give us all these documents. I did that and it's like, okay, cool. But you know what? You know, we decided last week we want you to also apply for an exemption, a special exemption from our Department of Foreign Affairs. Okay, well, who do I talk to over there? And it just spiraled into this whole very long, convoluted process. And I feel like it's going to be that way where you have these two groups. You have the vaccinated, you have the unvaccinated. And there's going to be, there already is, this push to complicate the lives of the unvaccinated to get them on the other side. And you're going to have a lot of people that are just, and I can't blame them. I mean, to just get exhausted and just say, you know what, fine, forget it. Here, give it to me.
Yeah. So if this was like the worst it was going to get, like, okay, we have to get this tested now and again. And, you know, if that was going to be the worst it's going to be, probably I could put up with it. Maybe I could do an antibody check every 6 months. Fine, right? But as the price of Bitcoin keeps going up, it doesn't go flat, it keeps going up. In a sense, this curve of infringements doesn't mean that it stops here. And it's going up so fast, these infringements on our rights, that we don't know what the peak is, right? We're not at an all-time high right now. So this is what's really scary, is that we don't know, these insider people, what their next level is. You know, they're talking about the Great Reset now. We've got this stuff, you will own nothing and be happy. They're talking about the World Economic Forum. They're talking about the cyber pandemic. You need to be careful for that. We need to have more protections around our IT systems. We don't know what the limit is, and people don't seem to think beyond this. I mean, for example, the COVID certificate in the European Union, they're not even saying when it's going to stop or what are the conditions for it to stop. They're just saying this is what it is.
And I think that's the grand plan for it to be the new abnormal, the new way of life. And, you know, I wondered this last summer, where when this whole thing, you know, kicked off in March, there seemed to be a loose plan. You know, at least our individual states, their governors would give these dates, you know, hey, you know, two weeks to flatten the curve, or, you know, 1 month to stop the spread, that whole thing. So at least there, it seemed as though there was light at the end of the tunnel. It seemed like there was an actual plan, where now it's just wear this mask, take this shot, go here, do this, you know, get your passport, your vaccine passport. All right, how long are we doing this? You know, well, you know, we're figuring that out. You know, we just don't understand what we're dealing with here. And a lot of people have made that statement, which is just bizarre. It's like, how do you not know what we're dealing with at this point? You know, so it's just an opportunity to take a lot of ideas and concepts that were on the shelf, dust them off, and just throw them at these individual societies. And because everyone's so scared, hey, just give me anything to get my life back to normal. I don't care what I have to do. You know?
I don't know, man. It's constant wearing us down of just distress of the stuff. Regarding what masks, right? So on Sundays at my church is in a neighborhood where there's quite a lot of Middle Eastern people, and I absolutely love my shawarma kebabs, you know, kif, shish tauk, whatever you want to call it. And we have these FFPA2, whatever it's called, masks that we have to wear here in Austria. And basically, well, there's all these people that are making the kebabs with the knives. They have these masks, but they basically sit under the chin, right? So you have this piece of cloth that's under their, basically all of my beards as well, like, you know, longer than mine's, and they're sweating into this thing all day, and they're touching this thing here, you know, just because they can't breathe, and then they're making the kebabs, taking the money, and I'm just like, what is this craziness? Why can't some health official in Austria stand up and say, these people will either die with the mask on, or they're going to have lovely pieces of sweat from their, you know, masks all day long. Anyone who's working in that condition is doing it. And people are probably not on the high wage, so they don't know how much they can afford these masks. So maybe they're reusing the masks for a week or something like that. You know, and I absolutely love the food. I still go there, you know.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, I've seen some things. It's hard not to laugh, or, you know, I chuckle a little bit internally. I'll put it that way. I've seen people, you know, they're standing outside and they got their mask on and they're pulling it down to take a puff of their cigarette. I went to a pizza shop a couple of weeks ago with my daughter, and people were staring at us while we were in the pizza shop because we didn't have a mask on. And these people had their mask off and they were eating like 5 feet away from us. It's like, well, what's the difference? So you wore your mask walking in, you ordered your food, then you took it off to eat. Like, I don't. So COVID understands all that. COVID is just, hey, you're eating. It's a timeout. You do your thing. I'll come back and infect you later. It's just, I don't get it.
I think that the mask is almost symbolic of like people being silenced, and you, every time you put this thing on, it's basically you're being beaten down, you know, like 1984, the future is like a fist continually pounding on someone's face. And every time you put this mask on that you don't believe in, that's actually going to help you. You think it's actually damaging you now because you know you're reusing this mask again and again, and you know, finances are low. And, but yet you still put it on because everybody else is doing it. So every time you're doing it, basically acquiescence, and you're being beaten down and beaten down and beaten down. And it's prolonged after about a year and a half. People are just like, yeah, give me the vaccine, you know?
Well, there's been this interesting transition as well where, you know, last year you had mask versus the unmasked. You had masked people that, well, not all, of course, but you had some that were demonizing those not wearing a mask. And I've had people like, hey, you're killing grandma and you're doing this and you need to wear a mask. And now with the vaccines, you had this transition where now you have people, because when I'm in a public setting, or, you know, if I'm in the office, everyone else, I believe, is vaccinated. So they're not wearing a mask. I'm wearing one. So then you have that shift where you have some people looking at those now wearing a mask as being strange, or maybe possibly against science or something like that. It's because it signifies, oh, well, you didn't get the jab yet, so obviously there's something wrong with you. You're clearly a Trump supporting psycho. Or I don't know. People just run with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, what I think people need to do is do some psychological evaluation that once you're vaccinated, because once you're vaccinated, right, you're all in. You've got everything, all the chips are on the table. You can't go back. So it makes sense for you to believe 100% that what you've done is right. And that's going to, anything that challenges that is going to be uncomfortable for you. So basically you have to look at how you behave to other people now. So when you go into a shop and you see somebody trying to go in the shop, and the guy asks them, or do you have your COVID green certificate? And the person says, no, I don't. And they say, no, you can't come into the shop, and they have to walk away. Then once you go up to get into the shop, you've got your passport and you can go in. You have to look carefully how you feel. Do you feel good that this person can't go, and you feel better than them, or do you feel, you know, worried about the other person's human rights? And whatever direction you're going, that shows how much you've been influenced. And it's going to be very worrying when we see a society that starts to divide and look down on people that have chosen not to get vaccinated. Scary, actually.
Oh yeah, it harkens back to there was a book I read, they thought they were free, the author escapes me, but this individual talks about he called them his 10 Nazi friends. So, you know, this is after World War II. This journalist goes over, stays in several cities, talks to individual people, just wanting to understand, how did this happen? How did things get this carried away, or this crazy? And so many of them, their stories were fairly simple. It was just, hey, you know, it started with something small. And it didn't really affect my work. I was still able to be with my family. So I just said, fine, you know, and then it just kept progressively getting worse, you know, and then the government itself became, of course, more totalitarian and more aggressive and deadly in this particular case. But each story, it started out the same way. I just was living my life. And then the next thing you know, I had no choice but to become a Nazi, and I had to do this, this, and this. And I figured it would be over soon. So they just kept going along with it and waiting, and reached a point of no return where they all wished, like, you know, I wish I would have said something. I wish I would have done something, or I would have said no, or something.
So there's different dynamics here. When you look at Nazi Germany, somebody in that situation, once you're a citizen there and Hitler's starting to take more and more powers, he has a sort of time lag between how quickly his orders can get rolled out from the radio to the, you know, through to whatever. I guess it can be, it's almost instantaneous as well back then because they had radios. So so in a sense, the people back then had less of a chance than they do now if something goes wrong, because we have the tools to communicate if there's a dictatorship arising. We have the internet. But also on the other side, the any malefactors nowadays can also control information also. So there's a lot of things, a lot of variables here that it would take some time to analyze to find out how the dynamics of a dictatorship would arise versus now. I mean, there is some damage. You see the Arab Spring, you've seen how quickly revolutions came up there because of the internet. But that was a revolution that occurred in the midst of nothing, in a sense. So, but here we have the governments moving first to impose more things upon us. So we don't really know what it would be like for, you know, all these citizens if we have to stand up and protect ourselves with our technologies.
Well, it definitely makes, you know, if you go back 50, 60 years, cultural changes would take, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And even there was a former KGB agent that talked about ideological subversion. I can't remember his last name. Yuri was his first name. But he talked about how you can completely change a country's culture. And there was four steps. There was re-education. There was a demoralization crisis, and then a normalization post-crisis. And that process, this was something he discussed in the 1980s, and that process would take 20 to 30, maybe 35 years. Well, now with Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, you can warp a society's sense of reality pretty quick. And we've seen that. If you just have that censorship and you control the information, the flow of information. And in this country, we only have a handful of corporations. I think we're down to four that control about 90% of our intake of information, our flow of information. So, yeah.
Scary, mate. You know, we only have a certain amount of memory of how things were normal. So we have, you know, some youth right now that have, you know, above the age of 4 and 5, where that's the age they actually can remember stuff. They're actually, so basically their whole remembering life, they've known lockdowns. So they don't know what it's like, normal life behind that. Me and you, we haven't seen normal life in over a year at least. So to actually remember what it's like to be, you know, free to travel and to visit people and socialize, we have to think, actually, it's not just a non-effort brain process. We have to actually think and try and remember what it was like. And the longer this goes on, the more, the less desiring or the less motivation we'll have to get back to what it's like, because we're starting to forget what it's like to be normal. So that is a process where time is not on our side. And that's why people like us can be sort of ridiculed on LinkedIn or called the conspiracy theorists, because we're trying to get ahead of the curve so that we can influence society to not just take all the stuff lying down, you know?
Definitely. It's a sad thing. And you mentioned conspiracy theorists. Yeah, I don't know how many times I've been called that when I've brought up things that happened, like things that are historical truths. And I'll talk about a historical event, and it's just, I'll make some comparisons, I'll draw some parallels between something that happened in the 1950s to now, and, oh, you're such a conspiracy theorist. I even had a close friend say that to me, and I found it so bizarre. It's like, no, this is a thing.
Anti-vaxxer.
This is a thing that happened. Oh, yeah, I've had plenty of that. Like, oh, so you're not getting the shot. Oh, well, you're anti-vax. Like, no, actually, I think vaccines have their place, but don't you think it's strange that this took a year to be produced and you're just going to throw, I just think it's strange. I like to ask questions. I'm curious. I didn't think that was illegal.
I mean, look, there's been some good objections by like antibody dependent enhancement and other topics that if a prime minister or a scientist would sit down in front of the people and answer them, you know, this is what I've been calling. I wrote for City AM and they published it. You know, why don't we have clear, you know, publications on these objections, you know, straight answers. We need straight answers. People are getting angry. You know, I'm getting angry. Lots of people are getting angry. It would eliminate a whole bunch of citizenry anger if we just had more straight answers, you know, because this is starting to boil. This is people are on edge, man.
When it made me, you know, I was talking to someone last week and I just was curious, like, okay, is the point to cause revolt, because this is how you do it, where you present one angle and then you just completely shut down the other side, where you won't even acknowledge their position or even give them a platform to speak from. Well, that invites, that antagonizes and invites revolt.
Yeah.
So it's so in your face and it's so insulting, where you can bring up just some obvious things. Like, for instance, I was curious, hey, you know, why is it we're not talking about nutrition, diet, and the immune system? Why is it that that's, for whatever reason, we're just not even really going to discuss that?
Absolutely. You know?
And a large majority of people just like, oh, you're anti-vax, you're anti-science, you're like, no, I'm literally talking about actual science. Like that's science, where we share ideas, we go back and forth, you know, we come to a grand conclusion. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate.
I saw an American advert where they're talking about, is your friend on Facebook who builds dollhouses, is she a doctor? You know, trust the doctors, they know more than you. And that argument doesn't make any sense at all, because anybody can basically beat anything that's world-class. You know, maybe take them a bit longer to understand, but you can go on the internet and you can find out information for yourself, peer reviews. So this whole thing about we know better and you trust us because of our qualifications is just total Bravo Sierra, you know. What's really, really worries me, though, is that if there is a grand conspiracy new world order, which I'm not saying 100% there is, but it's starting to look and smell like it, you know, more and more, then maybe a revolt is planned. Maybe the division is planned. Maybe this system has been designed that it can only produce a great division and revolt in the people. And then maybe that is the game plan. So what is scary is that we're stuck between two bad options, this continual infringement of our rights or this revolt, which will then cause more infringement of our rights. That's kind of a scary thought, you know, that both paths, we have to choose one of them and both of them are not good. What is the fix for this?
Well, and there's no easy answer. But I'm quick to tell people that this, you know, violence is not the answer. It's the easy approach. I mean, heck, even toddlers, if they don't get what they want, they'll hit mommy in the leg or they'll throw something, because that's easy, that type of aggression, rather than sitting down and being methodical and actually thinking through the issues and looking at core issues, which is why, you know, we had our insurrection on January the 6th at the Capitol. And I had, when I was on Twitter, before I was kicked off of Twitter, I had a lot of friends like, hey, are you going to go and stop the steal? And they were shouting out all those wonderful slogans. And I said, don't. And I encouraged so many people, do not go to this thing. Like, I guarantee you it's going to be chaotic and someone's probably going to die. Just don't do it. And I tuned out, and then I was just plugging away. And someone texted me like, hey, are you seeing this? And then I was seeing the video feeds of people just fighting and throwing things. It's like, I knew it. I knew it. Someone was going to throw a rock at a cop or fight someone, and then it's just going to turn to crap. And it works great for our Congress here in this country, because now there you go. You've got a problem. Manage the reaction through the media. And here's the solution. New legislation that infringes on more rights and liberties and that sort of thing.
I think everybody who's concerned or not concerned should go to the History Channel. I'm not being paid for this, by the way, and watch as much documentaries on Hitler and his henchmen as possible, because I spent hundreds of hours studying that stuff in London. I had a sort of strange obsession about it. You know, I don't know if it was very healthy at the time, but it's been very healthy and really helped me to sort of see patterns that really, really scare me a lot, you know. Especially stuff about Goebbels, you know, propaganda, that really nasty man that was, but very, very, very well executed what they did.
Well, Hitler had it down to an exact science. Him and his, I'll call them his marketing staff, they had it down to exact science, to the way his speeches were crafted, the times during the day which he gave his speeches. He had a specific window of time in the evening that he would shoot for, the push to get radios in everyone's home, you know. And of course, now we've got, you know, 5G and laptops and everything, and so everyone has access to that information. So it's incredibly sad. I mean, but there's truly nothing new under the sun. Like if you just look at the events and you look at the things that happened, you know, in the 1950s, well, 1930s, 1950s. And even if you go back to World War One, you look at, you know, each one, there's always a major event. Then there's some sort of push for propaganda. And then that propaganda permeates down to individual citizens. And then it just runs from there. You know, it's the patterns are there.
So if you look at the timelines, Hitler had about 20 years where he built up to absolute ruler. But if we look at our timelines, we have about a year since this pandemic started. But, you know, going into sort of conspiracy mode now, we don't know how long this thing was planned. You know, I should have a P or a C for saying this is conspiracy time, you know. But we don't know how long people have been preparing for this. You know, you could sort of say, well, you know, Bill Gates talking about reducing the population by 15%. That was a few years ago. We've got the Georgia Guidestones that were set up saying keep the world population under 500 million. So in a sense, you could argue that, yeah, it's only been a year, but it's not been that. It's been actually been longer. This is just the execution of it. Like, for example, Hitler's execution of the Kristallnacht you know, yeah, taking out his oppositions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredibly sad. And it's just the lack of curiosity when you present this information and you ask these questions and you just, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm not telling you what to do. I give some recommendations and I try to encourage people just to ask questions, you know, do your own research, ask questions and listen. But we've been so in this country, we've been so lazy and incurious for decades. We're talking, you know, 60, 70, 80 years of just continuous, unchallenging compliance to just whatever rolls out. And we just accept it to the point now where the system has a lot of built-in controls where you'll have people, you know, attacking the individuals that do ask those questions. You know, it's a crazy thing. It's a almost predictable thing, but still somewhat surprising. Just the scale.
Yeah, people are just getting worn down. People have been protesting in the UK and people are saying that what's the point? You know, nothing changes. We protest and the media makes us look stupid. And, you know, look at how Ukraine was, they basically had a camp, but they were, you know, there's also conspiracy theories around that. And I won't really go into it, but honestly, mate, I don't think we can do anything. I think this thing is on the, as human beings, I don't think we can stop this. And now I'm just telling, basically, the only thing that can save us is God.
Well, you know, it's a lot of people are, you know, still hopeful, and I'd have to say I wouldn't exactly say I'm hopeful in the sense that just everything's going to drastically change. I'm hopeful in the sense that, you know, I believe this will force people to make a decision because we've been sitting around for so long, just sort of being indifferent to a lot of things, just doing, you know, just nothing, just sort of coasting. But this will put us in a position where it's either, you know, we stand up for what we believe in and we take a firm position, we stand firmly on our principles, or we just forfeit it all. We forfeit our agency, our sense of responsibility, duty, of being a citizen, and we just hand it over to someone else and we let them write our story for us. And it won't be a very pleasant story, but at least it'll force people to do something, to make some sort of choice. And I, you know, I'm sorry, that's not a, you know, sunshine or a happy analysis, but I think it could lead us to something better. Yeah. Potential. There's potential.
Yeah. Do you mind if I say a little prayer?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've been a bit of an agnostic for a very long time and I was raised as a Christian. But it's one of those things where I understand the importance of religion in society. And of course, I respect the others in their beliefs. So, hey, I've got no problem with that.
Okay. Dear Father, I pray for Sir Thomas. I pray that you'd help him in his mission, his task and words that he says. I'll ask you to protect him and give him wisdom and Help them to understand your ways, Father in heaven. Also, Father, I pray for just humanity in general. I just pray that you would teach us as every individual to know your ways and to come close to you, to escape this potential horrible tyranny that's coming on mankind. And I pray that you'd put into the hearts of freedom-loving men and women, children, to stand up for what is right and righteousness, that we would not fall into this whole new world order agenda, that you would be glorified in Jesus' name. Amen. I like to pray because I find that, you know, I could spend, instead of spending 6 or 7 hours just trying to go through all the psychological possibilities and all the stuff, and even when I'm talking to like atheists and stuff like that, that I don't have to basically prove anything. I believe that God has power, and prayer changes things. You know, the Bible is full of, you know, promises of what prayer does, and the last thing we ever do is go to prayer. We just expect the government to sort it out. Well, the government's not sorting it out, so maybe we should go back to basics, you know?
Well, I certainly don't want government to become the new God. I definitely don't want that, or the new religion, or COVID, or the COVIDian faith to become the dominant faith. So, yeah.
Well, Sir Thomas, this has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I'm not sure what we've accomplished. We've accomplished something that hopefully somebody can cheer on to and look back at and say, think maybe we've changed some. Maybe we've changed some thoughts that will try and stand up for human freedoms, you know.
Sparking curiosity. That's my hope.
Anything you want to leave us with?
No, I just want to say, you know, thanks for having me. Anyone out there, if you'd like to check me out, I've got Snell Nation on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. I'm not a hard man to find. And if you'd like to have a conversation, I love talking just about anything. So that's my plug. So thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, and you got to definitely follow Sir Thomas on LinkedIn. He is the meme master. I don't know how he gets away with what he posts on LinkedIn. I don't know how he does it. But I think he just posts pictures. That's what it is. I do text, so I've been thrown off once. Have you been thrown off LinkedIn before?
No, I get the occasional warning, is what I get, man. And I've been able to dispute quite a few things, even on Facebook. I've gotten pretty good about disputing and winning some of the disputes and having things reposted. So, yeah, I've been in a good groove. Knock on wood.
Okay. Well, I'll see you around soon, and we'll be in touch. And I'm watching Europe amongst, you know, with 1,000 other people. You're watching America with 1,000 other people, and at least it's not going to be boring. Clay, we will not be bored.
Yeah, this will be a decade that'll be studied for many years to come.
Okay, so Thomas, thanks for coming and talking to me, and thanks for everybody who's watching this show here today. And we'll see you again shortly. Bye-bye.